It's Friday, July 20th, 4 p.m. here in Washington, D.C. I'm Liz Wall, and you're watching RT. Well, one of the deadliest mass shootings in recent U.S. history today. A gunman opened fire inside a movie theater in Denver, killing 12 people and wounding more than 50 others. The gunman, you see here, 24-year-old James Holmes, a former medical student. Before the shooting, he threw a gas canister into the packed crowd of moviegoers. Law enforcement says he had an assault rifle, a shotgun, and two pistols. Now, Holmes is now in custody. The FBI trying to investigate the suspect's home, but found it to be booby-trapped with explosives. Now, we talk a lot about surveillance here and how it affects people's right to privacy and the justification for surveillance, whether it's cameras or online. The justification is that it is for our safety. So in this day of heightened security and the vast resources spent in the name of protecting our safety, how does something like this happen? To discuss this tragedy in depth, I'm joined now by Brian Doherty. He's a senior editor for Reason Magazine. He's also the author of this book you see there, Gun Control on Trial. Brian, welcome to the show. So we live in an age of cameras, of drones, you know, more legislation aimed at regulating the internet. So how does something like this happen?
Well, if I'm reading the stories correctly, it happened because one lunatic kicked in the back door of a theater, you know, came in with some guns and started shooting at people. It escapes me a little bit what sort of surveillance or even what sort of gun laws, short of the magical ability to make every gun disappear, which we all know can't happen, could have prevented this. It's a shame almost that we have to talk about the policy of this stuff on a day when this tragedy is resonating in the minds and hearts of the people affected, but I understand why we do. But it is worth remembering that these events and gun murders in general are rare and getting rarer every year, no matter how much we hear about them in the media, and that there isn't any meaningful policy response that can guarantee stopping one evil lunatic from doing something this awful.
Do you think a tragic incident like this, though, is going to feed the demand for stricter gun laws?
You know what? It's good. You're going to hear a lot about it in the next 48 hours, but I think the history of other recent major national news gun tragedies, including the one at the school in West Virginia a few years back and the one that wounded Representative Giffords last year, you hear a lot of talk, but it has not tended to lead to actual legislative offerings. What's happened with the whole gun control issue in America since the mid-90s is that nearly every state has severely loosened its laws regarding the ability to legally carry weapons. So you have many more Americans carrying weapons. You have 4 million a year new Americans buying weapons. And yet you're seeing the gun violence rates plummet nearly by half over the last 20 years. So most Americans have learned that there isn't this correlation between access to guns and crime such that more gun control is going to actually solve any social problem. So I think you'll hear chatter, but I don't think you'll see any actual new legal action.
So you're saying that this incident won't be enough to prompt changes in policy. But Brian, I mean, at what point, how many tragedies need to occur? How many stories of mass gun violence do we need to see before we do reach that threshold and people say something does need to change?
Well, what do people think needs to change? As I said, the number of guns in Americans' hands grows enormously every year. The number of Americans with the legal ability to carry them has grown enormously, and yet the number of gun murders is plummeting. There simply isn't a policy solution that can stop these very rare instances when one evil lunatic decides to commit a horrible crime. I mean, I know when these things happen, people want to reach for an answer. They think something can be done or should be done, but I'm not sure what can or should be done. I mean, the world is, you know, I was going to say full, and that's wrong. The world is not full of these sorts of people. The world has a very tiny amount of them, and these things happen very rarely.
You're using the word rare there, and I think it's kind of arguable how you can use that word. I mean, this tragic incident resulted in a dozen lives lost. Dozens more were shot. We had the incident with Gabrielle Giffords not too long ago. We saw a string of shootings in high schools. And to somebody watching television, it doesn't seem like it is that rare.
I know it doesn't, but they're mistaken. That's the problem with trying to make policy decisions or come to empirical conclusions based on dramatic storytelling. You need to look at the statistics. I'll say this for the third time. The number of guns circulating in America and the number of Americans legally able to use them increase enormously. 4 million new guns a year. Nearly every state now has pretty liberal, in a pro-Second Amendment sense, laws regarding carry. Yet, in the last two decades, gun homicides have plummeted by nearly half. It is simply not the case that these things are happening more frequently. And again, I ask, what policy solution do you think actually could have prevented this?
All right. You use the word dramatic or as if it's being blown out of proportion, but I don't think words can even express the horror of what happened yesterday.
They absolutely cannot. As I started off saying, it's unfortunate that we even have policy discussions on a day when what should really be important is the grief and terror of the people who were victimized and their families. But unfortunately, that's what the media does. We talk about policy when these things happen. What I'm here to say is there's not really a good reason to be talking about policy associated with these incidents because there's not a policy solution.
Now, Brian, I do understand the Second Amendment rights. I mean, it's a fundamental right here in the U.S., and, you know, advocates like yourself are very, really want to make sure that that right is upheld. But, I mean, in this scenario, this gunman, he allegedly was armed with an assault rifle, a shotgun, and two pistols. I mean, doesn't something need to be done to make sure that these weapons don't get into the hands of madmen?
Well, how did we know this man was a madman until he committed his mad act? Again, I ask people who are looking for a policy solution to come up with one other than waving a hand and having every gun disappear from the face of the earth, which we know is not going to happen. There is no policy solution to this. This guy, as far as we understand now, had no criminal record. There was no, we don't know, I don't know if this news broke in the last hour, it's news to me. We don't know how he obtained his weapons. We don't know if he bought them legally, which is possible, or illegally, which is also very possible in America. So it doesn't, in many cases, it doesn't even really matter what the laws were. At any rate, we do know that given what we understand about his record, there was no reason for anyone to have thought this guy shouldn't be able to possess a weapon.
Now, there's a lot of details that are still being sorted out, a lot of questions, a lot that we don't know. And he didn't, to our knowledge, he doesn't have a criminal history. But, I mean, he had this arsenal of weapons. Apparently, there's reports that the FBI, when they were trying to investigate his home, that his house was booby-trapped. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is pretty sophisticated planning. And the alarm bells somewhere along the way, somebody must have seen something to raise these alarm bells.
I have no idea if that's true, and neither do you. I don't really want to join the ridiculous game of speculation that's happened today that blamed everything from Occupy Wall Street to the Tea Party to video games to lack of Christianity for this. This is one insane idiot decision. And again, it's a little tricky for me to see how a policy solution or us presuming that, oh, someone should have been able to stop this from happening, it doesn't seem reasonable to say right now.
So, I mean, so you don't think that there needs to be any change in policy whatsoever? I mean, yes, obviously something, he wasn't mentally there. He obviously wasn't, you know, in a sound state of mind. But, I mean, he is a madman, but he did have the tools to carry out this horrific act.
Well, he was evil. You know, he was evil. He seemed to have a goal. He seemed to have a goal of killing a lot of people. Probably making a lot of news because he chose to do it in a very colorful place, chose to apparently booby-trap his own apartment because he knew police would be going to it. So this is an evil guy. I don't think we should really be looking for these mental health explanations.
And shouldn't
either.
guns be kept out of the hands of evil people?
What are you talking about? Again, no one had any reason to suspect that there was anything wrong with this guy that should have prevented him from legally buying a gun, even though also I don't know if he did legally buy the gun. I honestly don't know what people who talk about policy solutions are talking about. I mean, I'm going to lay this out to you if you're saying that. What do you think could have happened legally to stop this from happening?
I mean, that's the details are still being worked out. But people that are critics of say that something needs to be done to make sure that whether it's regulation, at the same time protecting the right to bear arms for citizens like yourself that will use them, you know, for nonviolent methods, but also to do something to make sure that people that are evil are not able to use these as tools to commit these horrific acts.
There's not really any way to do that except for standard background checks, which only work on people who have already committed a criminal act. If your very first criminal act in your life on Earth is going to be a mass slaughter with guns, I honestly can't imagine what policy solution can stop that. But it is worth remembering for those who just sort of have this real deep sense of both sorrow and terror about what happened today, that this stuff, despite how loud it rings in all of our hearts for good reason on the day it happened, is not an everyday thing. It's barely an every year thing, and that overall gun murder rates have plummeted in the last 20 years by more than around half.
All right. You know, we spend a lot of, I want to ask you, we spend a lot of billions of dollars overseas, you know, on these wars overseas. And when something like this happens, it kind of begs this question: are we falling short of investing here at home, protecting our citizens here at home?
Well, we surely should not be wasting all the money we're wasting on all these overseas wars. But again, I'm not sure what sort of policing or security solution could have stopped this, except maybe, you know, a better lock on the door that this maniac kicked his way through. I mean, we're pretty heavily policed in the United States as it is. It's really, I think, a mental error to assume that there's some sort of security solution that can stop every single evil maniac from doing an evil thing. And I think believing that that's the case, it leads you down dangerous paths in terms of both our privacy and our rights.
All right, Brian, a very interesting take there. Thank you so much for coming on the show. That was Brian Doherty. He's a senior editor for Reason Magazine and author of the book Gun Control on Trial.